Good morning. I've not been organised enough this week to ask anybody else to do the reading, so I'm going to have to do it myself. So this morning we are in Luke's Gospel, we're in chapter 24, and we're going to read from verse 13, a really familiar story this morning, so let's read it together. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognising him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he would be the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what's more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it and began to give it to them. Their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It's true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognised by them when he broke the bread. This morning then we join two of Jesus' followers on the road to Emmaus, possibly a really familiar story for all of us. So these two guys, we know one's called Cleopas, not sure who the other one is, but two guys on the road to Emmaus. And Emmaus is about 7 miles outside of Jerusalem. So they are heading away from Jerusalem, away where all the stuff to do with Jesus over the last week or so had happened. I wonder if these guys, as they were walking towards Emmaus, actually are walking with heavy hearts. Heavy hearts because the dreams and the hopes that they had in terms of who Jesus was and what he was going to do have suddenly been shattered. It's like they're all just lying in bits round about them. All the things that they had pinned on Jesus, all of the hopes, all of the dreams, all of the stuff that they thought that Jesus was coming to do, even who Jesus was, perhaps, was lying in tatters round about them. You know, these guys had lived through that roller coaster of Holy Week, as we call it now. They'd had the euphoria of Palm Sunday when everybody's out shouting for Jesus and it looks like really everybody's behind him. So the euphoria of that down to the clearing of the temple, you know, as he turned over the tables in the temple, perhaps they looked at him and thought, yes, our Messiah is finally here and he's going to sort all of this stuff that is wrong. He's going to make sure everybody is held accountable. But then, of course, as the week progressed, then they hit the Last Supper with all of the odd stuff that was going on in there and then the crucifixion itself and Jesus is dead. And these guys looking at what is going on here just don't really understand, I guess, and are trying to make sense of all of it. This is Easter Sunday though, as we would know it now. Easter Sunday, they already know the women have been to the tomb and the women have come back and have told them that Jesus isn't there. And it's odd, isn't it? Because we look at that story and we think, well, why did they just not get it? But in the midst of their grief and their confusion, they seem to have forgotten bits of the stuff that Jesus had already said to them. So two folks, walking along the road, feelings churning round about inside them. Perhaps there was grief there, perhaps there was sadness, maybe confusion, maybe lots of disorientation, maybe even a bit of anger. All this stuff that had just come from left field and the reality of what they were facing now and what they were looking at in terms of what they'd sunk their life into with Jesus. Looking at it all and wondering what on earth was going on. And so what do? They head back to Emmaus. They head back to a place that was familiar to them. Emmaus, just outside of Jerusalem, we know later on in the passage that they invite Jesus to stay with them. And so in Emmaus, there's obviously a place that these folks live. Somewhere that was familiar to them. Somewhere that they'd known from the past. And as they're walking on the road to get to this place, they're going over what they've experienced. They're talking together about all the stuff that they've experienced round about Jesus. Maybe they were talking about the wee boy's lunch and how that had fed 5,000 people. Maybe they were talking about the healing that they'd seen, the people that they'd seen healed. Maybe they're talking about the day that Jesus turned the water into wine. I don't know. But they were talking about all the things that they had seen happen. They were verbally processing what was going on. And perhaps they were verbally processing the events of Holy Week itself as they tried to straighten out in their heads what on earth had happened. You know, crisis and life events that come at us from left field have the potential to completely disorientate us, to almost knock us off balance and find that we can't put somewhere where it feels solid for our feet to go. It's kind of been like that for us in the past year, hasn't it? What have you talked about in the past year when you've seen folks over Zoom or in your doorstep, or even if you've met people when you've been outside? What have you talked about? We've all talked about the pandemic, haven't we? We've all talked about what's going on. We've talked about restrictions. We've talked about death rates. We've talked about how it's affecting us and how it's affecting other people. And that's what was happening with these guys here. These guys were totally wrapped up in this. What had happened with Jesus was a bit like what's happening with us with the pandemic. And so when Jesus draws alongside them and says to them, you know, why are you so upset? They look at him as if, you know, he's got two heads. That would be like somebody in the street saying to us, so why are you wearing a mask at the moment? It's like, where have you come from? How do you not know what has been going on? And that's the kind of incredulity that that these guys meet Jesus' comment to them with. They're trying to make sense of what has happened. They've left the others behind. I wonder why they left the others behind. Why did they not stay in Jerusalem? Maybe it's as simple as that disorientation sends them back to a place that's familiar to them. They try to find somewhere where there's some amount of comfort. We're also told in a previous verse, in verse 11 in this chapter actually, that even when the women came back and they told the others what had happened, verse 11 says, but they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Even though Jesus has prepared them for what's going to happen, he's told them the Messiah needs to suffer and die and then he'll rise again, somehow in their grief and confusion and disorientation they've forgotten the last part of what's there. Or maybe just the whole idea of Jesus rising from the dead again blew their minds so much that actually it caused even more turmoil with them and caused them to go back to Emmaus. What had happened didn't fit the paradigm that they had or their expectations, so they go back to what's familiar. We do the same, don't we, when things disorientate us, when we're faced with stuff that doesn't fit what our understanding is, that doesn't fit the paradigm that we have, that doesn't fit how we expected Jesus to work or how we expected our lives to be. Sometimes we go back to things that are familiar to us. It's not really any coincidence that relapse rates go through the roof when there's some kind of crisis happens. We go back to the thing that we know worked, that gave us comfort. It might not be relapse, it might be going back to old thought patterns or going back even to places and people that we had left long, long time ago to transition into a new place and a new life with new people. And actually we go back into a place that's from a long time ago because it gives us some sense of comfort and familiarity when everything else is completely blown out of the water. Old ways of being, old connections, old thought patterns, old behaviour patterns. And I guess that's what's happened maybe with these guys on the road. They're going back to the thing that was familiar. But they didn't plan on Jesus turning up in the middle of their journey. And that's exactly what happens. Jesus turns up in the midst of all that's going on. Jesus doesn't wait until they've worked it out. He doesn't wait till they've got themselves in a better place emotionally. He doesn't wait till they've seen the error of their ways and turned around and headed back to Jerusalem. He doesn't do any of that. He meets these guys right in the middle of the turmoil that they're in at the moment. He comes right into the middle of their pain and their grief. He gets alongside them and he walks with them. There's no condemnation. He doesn't try to correct their thinking. He doesn't give them a row because they've not believed the women or because they're on their way back to Emmaus. He just joins them on the walk and he invites them to tell him their story. No smart words, no advice, no nothing at that point. Just an invitation to tell their story. So often when we walk alongside other people, we are really quick to jump in with our advice or our experience or what we think's happening or how we can help them or support them. Jesus doesn't do that. He simply walks with them. He's not afraid of their confusion. He's not afraid of their grief or their pain or their questions or the fact that they think that the whole thing is just falling about round about their feet. He's not afraid of any of that. He's really comfortable, simply walking alongside them as they try to work out what on earth is going on. We're not told how long Jesus walked with them, but we are told that he explained all the scriptures to them, starting with the prophets. So I'm thinking that's quite a long piece of explanation. So the chances are that he walked with them for quite a while, walking along the road, and they didn't recognise him. Of course, God can prevent us from recognising people, and he can use our own mind and our own thoughts and our own emotions in order to be able to do that. And perhaps that's what's happened here. One of the commentators on this passage has another angle on it, and he says this. They had a preconceived idea of who Jesus was, what he had come to do and how he should do it. But when things didn't turn out like they thought they should, they dismissed the whole thing as mere failure, as misplaced hope and trust. Their preconceived idea meant that they didn't realise that this was him. Perhaps these guys, like all of the others at the time, had a preconceived idea of who Jesus was and of what he was going to do. Perhaps they were more comfortable with Jesus angry in the temple than they were with Jesus on the cross. Perhaps they were more comfortable with Jesus dead than Jesus alive, because it totally blew the paradigm that they had out of their head. Whoever had heard of a dead man walking before? Whatever it was, perhaps their preconceived idea had stopped them from recognising Jesus when he was on the road. Jesus was dead, and so therefore there was nothing in their head that would even have thought that Jesus was going to walk alongside them. I wonder what your preconceived idea of Jesus is. Perhaps your preconceived idea of Jesus is the baby in the manger. Perhaps for you, he hasn't grown up. He's still the baby in the manger, doesn't pose a huge amount of threat, still the baby in the manger. Or perhaps Jesus did grow up, and perhaps you've looked at his teachings and looked at his writing, looked at the scriptures and looked at what's been written about him, and you've looked at that and you've thought what a wise man Jesus was, what a great teacher he was, what a great prophet he was, but actually that was then and not now. Or perhaps you've a particular way of thinking about Jesus. Perhaps Jesus is the one that's there on a Sunday, or the one that's there around church people or around about people who share faith. And you would expect Jesus to be there, but perhaps you wouldn't expect him to be in other places. What do you expect Jesus to do? You know, I've been around places, and I'm sure many of you have too, where the rhetoric that's been preached has been, you come to Jesus and life will be great. I don't know about you, but that's not always been true in my life. I came to Jesus when I was 18, officially came to Jesus when I was 18, when I understood what it was. But I had been brought up with Jesus in my life from the very, very beginning. And that didn't mean that everything was hunky-dory. That didn't mean that everything was okay. And sometimes if we have the picture that coming to Jesus and being in relationship with Jesus means that suddenly our life takes on an ease and nothing bad happens, then when life doesn't go that way, sometimes that preconceived idea of who Jesus is and what he's going to do is just blown out of the water for us. And we go back to the familiar thing that's not with Jesus, because we can't reconcile this thing that's going on over here with the paradigm that we have. What if Jesus draws alongside us in the midst of all the stuff that goes on for us? What if Jesus isn't a great Santa Claus who we come to and he sorts all our problems? What if Jesus turns up in places where you wouldn't expect him to turn up? Would you still see him? Would you still know that it was him? Would you still recognise him? What would happen if Jesus came into your life or my life or to our corporate life as a faith community and started turning over some tables? Would you recognise him? What if the paradigm that Jesus has in terms of our growth as a church and our journey as a church is different to the paradigm we have? Would we still recognise Jesus in the midst of that? Or would we be like these folks on the road to Emmaus that were so blinkered, if you like, in the mindset that they were in, that we would miss that Jesus had drawn alongside us? You know, almost a year ago now, I talked about how in the midst of our feelings, in the midst of these crazy feelings that come with the pandemic, with the anxiety, with the fear, with the grief, with the sometimes even the anger, with all of that, we can try and distance ourselves from those feelings and push them away somewhere. But actually, in the midst of it, there's an opportunity to encounter something of Jesus that we would never have seen before had we not experienced some of those things or felt some of those things. There's opportunities to encounter Jesus in a new way, even in places where we wouldn't expect him to be. And sometimes it's in those dark places that Jesus is the last person that we would expect to meet. So sometimes in the dark places that we go to in our head, where we have questions about who Jesus is, about what this faith thing is all about, about what church is all about and our place in church, what Jesus is doing in the midst of our life, whether or not we can even believe what's going on in the Bible and what we've believed all our lives. When those questions come up, that feels sometimes like a really dark place to be. And sometimes we wouldn't even expect to encounter Jesus there. But that's the kind of place that these guys on the road to Emmaus were in. They were in a dark, dark place, and there's Jesus right beside them. See, Jesus isn't afraid of our darkness. He's not afraid of our questions. He's not afraid of our anger or our grief or our loneliness or our anxiety or our depression or anything else. He's not afraid of any of it. And he's really happy to come alongside us and to walk alongside us in the midst of it. What if Jesus this week was in a place where you least expect him? Perhaps you would least expect to see Jesus in the midst of family members who are hostile towards him. Perhaps you would expect to see Jesus least in a place in our world where it just seems that all the values are totally against what Jesus stands for. Would you miss Jesus because you would think that he wasn't there? I want to encourage us this week to take the story of the road to Emmaus out into the journeys that we go on this week, wherever it is we go. You know, whether it's a familiar place or an unfamiliar place, whether it's to somewhere that looks like it's a place that Jesus should be, or whether it's somewhere that looks like the last place that Jesus should be. Let's take this story of the road to Emmaus out with us and expect to encounter Jesus on whatever journey we find ourselves in this week. Let's look for him in all the places that we think he would be, but let's look for him in all the places that we really wouldn't expect him ever to be. And perhaps we'll be surprised. Let's pray together. Jesus, we thank you that you want to draw alongside us. We thank you that you want to walk that journey with us, regardless of what it is that's going on in the journey for us, regardless of what our questions are, what our feelings and emotions are, regardless of what is going on in our lives or in the lives of others. Jesus, will you help us to see you this week in places that we would not expect to see you? Will you help us to see you in our doubts, in our questions, in the darkness? Will you help us to expect to see you in our political systems? Will you help us to see you in our world? Will you help us to expect to see you in our workplaces? Will you help us to expect to see where you're working in groups of people who are hostile towards you? Because Jesus, nothing is too big or too scary for you to be involved in. Thank you, Jesus, that you walk with us on the journey, whether that's a journey in the sunshine or a journey as we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that you walk with us. Thank you for the truth of that, and let that be the thing that defines us this week, and let everybody see that's different for your sake and for your glory. Amen. We are going to finish our service this morning by singing the blessing over one another. I would encourage you to pray for someone that you know who's watching this morning, or even someone that you know who's not watching who will watch later. Let's pray for folks that are in our faith community and beyond this morning. If you're watching this and you're not part of our faith community here, and you want to do that, you want to connect in, then please do get in touch with us. The number will come up at the end and the email address at the end, and you'll be able to do that. We'd love to hear from you and to welcome you here. So let's sing and pray this blessing over each other as we go. Have a great week. The